You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 436.
Well, how do you do? My name is Lars. Campbell, California. You might know that by now. I'm of Danish descent. For that I'm proud. You see, my father was a nomad. I haven't seen him for a while. Brother, still got a mother. I ain't motherless. For some of you out there, that might be hard to believe. You see, I've been up and I've been down. I smiled and I frowned. I've made every gesture that a young man could steal. And I know that I'm married to the sea. Well, I know that I'm married to the sea. You see, some people are locked down and some are free. But I know that I'm married to the sea.
Welcome back to Punk News Podcast number 436. We're off with a battle cry, and that's always good because we are going to be talking about Viking things today. Vikings are known for the battle cry. Although the Viking we're going to be talking about today isn't a nice Viking. He's a bad Viking. But I guess that goes to the question, is there such a thing as a nice Viking? Or, I mean, does Viking even exist? Or is that, you know, kind of a postmodernist term applied to a group of people which are unique and shouldn't be put on the same umbrella? We'll find out in this episode of Punk News Podcast. We are here with Managing Editor Adam White. Adam White, Vikings, are you pro, con, in between? Where do you stand
on
Vikings?
I think you came up with this potential quandary, and you're like, we'll find out on this episode. And it's like, no, we won't. We aren't going to answer whatever that is. As I understand it, just given how other people in the world seem to operate, if I was a person of, and I'm probably wrong even by saying Scandinavian, but Scandinavian heritage, maybe I don't want to be just called a Viking. Any more, John, than you want to be called a, I don't know, what are you?
A produce man.
Yeah.
I love being called a produce man.
You come from a long line of produce, though. But they're like, what's a good, like, historical, like, Italian precedent for that? Like a Roman? Like, you're not a Roman.
A senator?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that, everyone wants to say senator. Like, everyone say, like, oh, centurion. I mean, well, that's Greek, isn't centurion? Like, the, you know, Roman soldier. But, like it's like saying, oh, yeah, Romans are like, the Italians are like Roman soldiers. Like, yeah, we're like the most baddest ass guys ever. And not everyone, there wasn't a single person that wasn't the most baddest ass guy ever. Anyway, Rome rules, Italy rules. I love ancient history.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my Italians, John, were like shoveling shit out of the aqueduct. I don't think that they were.
Yeah, honestly, like most Italians, like all Italians, like to think, oh yeah, you know, we were part of the phalanx, you know, we built the roads, we built the aqueducts, you know, we built court and medicine and all this. It's like, well, maybe you were just a farmer, like feeding cows or something. We're also here with Hallie Bullitt, regular Punk News Podcast contributor. Hallie Bullitt, Vikings, pro, con, and were you disappointed to learn that the Vikings with the horns with the helmets, not actually historically accurate? Did that bum you out?
Totally. Everyone wants to picture them running around with those helmets. That's a huge disappointment. I don't know. I feel good about Vikings. I mean, my family's been in the United States, like, honestly, so long that we're just like American. We're just like super boring, just like American. But given my coloring, I've probably got some Viking back in there somewhere.
I'd say it did blow my mind, and I believe this is relatively recent discovery, that Vikings were actually in North America before Christopher Columbus. That blew my mind.
Wait, and what? Did they just come and hang out and then leave?
Oh, there I can fill this in.
This
is a point of pride for us. There was a Viking settlement that was found in Newfoundland in a place that they excavated called, I think it's called like L'Anse aux Meadows. And it's, they had a couple housing units that they had built on the shore there. And there's just been this like ever increasing trickling of like archaeological finds where they realized that like like way before Columbus, the Vikings kind of went up and hit like Iceland and Greenland, and then, you know, just that upper Atlantic coast of Canada. And there's all sorts of like weird places that are in, I think, in New England that are like at this point you get out of actual history and into like super speculative history. But there's all these places in New England where every once in a while, like, they'll dig up something, and then, you know, people are claiming, like, you know, they got down here. But I don't know if any of that's actually true. But they were totally in Newfoundland.
Nice.
Well, there you have it, Vikings. Is there anything they can't do? Well, listen, speaking of undiscovered territory and new areas, Hallie Bullitt, she recently saw a film that she hadn't seen before. Hallie Bullitt, what is your review?
Wait, no. So, yeah. So, the film was good. So... Don't laugh. So we went to see, so my husband loves professional wrestling. And so I like professional wrestling because just sheer like incessant exposure to it. And so we went to go see this movie with The Rock and Vince Vaughn called Fighting With My Family. And the movie was good. There's another aspect of it is what I actually want to talk about, but I will say the movie is enjoyable. If you like Glow or, I don't know, just like, yeah, it was like a good comedy about professional wrestling. But the thing that I wanted to talk about is that we're sitting there in the theater watching this like pretty, you know, pretty like mainstreamy movie, and who should come on the soundtrack but Kayetana from Philly. I was like shocked. We were so excited. So yeah, I don't know. That was mostly why I wanted to talk about that movie, because I was like surprised and psyched to hear Kayetana on the soundtrack for this like movie about professional wrestling with The Rock. It seemed like an odd pairing, but I was totally into it.
Kayetana, excellent band. I've seen them, and I also saw the spinoff band with Augusta called Gladdy, which is really cool too. Hallie, how should we handle this situation? I think Kayetana doesn't like us because a review was submitted that was so-so. We take open submissions to reviews, and we'll post pretty much a review by anybody so long as it is competent and so long as the person doesn't like clearly have an agenda. You know, like if someone's like, you know, I hate Green Day and here's my review of why I hate Green Day, well, we're not going to post that. But if someone doesn't like a Green Day record, we'll post it. You know, I think, and I could be wrong, I think Kayetana doesn't like Punk News because they got a kind of a mediocre or even bad review. And I respect they don't like us. I wouldn't like us either if I got a bad review. Should we do anything about that, or is that just how you got to roll with the water?
That's the free press, man. Not everybody's gonna like you.
Yeah, well, I feel bad about it because they're nice people, and I think they're pretty good. But I think sometimes people that read Punk News feel as though if we post a review, it's this is the Punk News opinion. Well, no, it's really just some guy's opinion that Punk News is posting. You know what I mean? I feel bad about it, but I guess that's the wounds we have to bear.
Absolutely. I guess the only time I ever got upset about reviews is if I felt like the person reviewing my stuff just wasn't a person that was like liked the kind of thing that I do. Do you know what I mean? When you're just sort of reading it and you're like, well, why did this person review this? Because it's clearly not the kind of thing that they enjoy. You're like, you know, as an artist, you feel a little bit set up for failure, you know? So that's thing. It's like you want to feel like the person reviewing it is someone that's like qualified to review it. Not obviously everyone is qualified to listen to a piece of music and decide if they like it or not, but you sort of just feel like, well, is this the kind of person who would have ever liked this? And if they are and then they didn't like it, then that to me is like perfectly valid. But I think sometimes artists get their nose bent out of shape if they're just like, well, this person was never going to like this record, so why'd they even review it to begin with?
I could totally see that being an issue when it seems like the person reviewing it isn't fluent in the style that you're trying to play into. And I mean, I experienced this as a fan where I saw a review today I haven't actually heard the record, but it's a band I like. And it's a garage punk record that they put out. But the review, which was like a 6 out of 10 kind of middle roady kind of review, in the lead of the review, they're like, oh, this band is some. You know, they fall somewhere between Fall Out Boy and the Ramones. And I'm like, what? I was like, they don't sound like that. I mean, they might sound kind of like the Ramones, I guess, more than the other. But that seems like you just went and put like a peg on one end of punk rock and then a peg on the other end of punk rock and said, you know, somewhere between these two points is where this band falls. And I'm like, that's not very helpful. And if you would have,
like, well, a lot of bands would fall in between those two points.
Yeah. And I'd imagine that if I was the band and I was reading that review, because it was a pretty big publication, that I would feel a little bit cheated that, like, the person that was considering my record didn't give it a little bit more of a closer consideration than, you know, this is a punk band. It kind of sounds like one of them. It's like, oh, all right.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah, no, that would feel like, ugh, like, why write about us then? Like, either don't write about us or ask a friend who actually likes this kind of shit to write about us then.
And, well, speaking of having people writing about things, you can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. That's podcast at punknews.org. Let's blast through some mail, because we've got a fair amount to cover this week. This is from Manuel. Manuel says, this is in reference to the episode Maximum Tom and Adam. You said that you stopped reading Maximum Rock and Roll in the 1990s. Now that it is gone, do you think anything will take its place? From Manuel.
I mean, John, this is actually good. You can chime in on this because you weren't on that MR episode too. I'm not sure who the scene is that MRR caters to. And when I say scene, like, I'm not sure where there are more than five people in a room that are reading it and making decisions about music. Like, I'm sure that there's lots of individuals all kind of scattered throughout that, you know, either because they historically read it or because they've just picked it up based on reputation, we're following Maximum Rock and Roll. But I don't know. I don't intersect with anyone right now where, you know, MRR is driving like a good chunk of people. So without having that critical mass of people together to actually decide, like, what's the next quote unquote importance or taste making publication, I don't know if we're going to get one. But that's, but you know, I live in my basement with a bunch of toddlers, so I don't know. John, like, did you encounter people that were still intersecting with Maximum Rock and Roll as, you know, as something that's driving part of a community? Did you still see that?
Yes, Philadelphia has the West Philadelphia punk scene, which is essentially the Maximum Rock and Roll audience. Now, most of them actually kind of don't like Maximum Rock and Roll because Maximum Rock and Roll is just a lot of people. But I think they all mostly respect it, or if they don't respect it, then they at least have conflicted feelings about it, like myself. And so that scene is alive and well in Philadelphia, and alive, you know. Sometimes that scene is really cool in that, you know, they're doing interesting, daring. It's basically almost as punk as it gets. But on the other hand, sometimes when you step back, you're like, I'm in a very small world here. It feels like I'm in 1988, and I don't want to be in 1988, you know. So Maximum Rock and Roll, like that scene, is both pure but also perhaps somewhat retro and diminishing returns, if you will. Hallie, Maximum Rock and Roll, you got an opinion?
I mean, I don't have an opinion, but, you know, but I sort of sadly am a person that, yeah, like, I used to read it. And then, you know, in the last few years, I would say I wasn't reading it anymore. So, you know, while I was like, I was super sad to see it go, though, somehow. It's just like, but then I should have been reading it, right? I don't know. I liked knowing that it was around. I'm sad that it's not around anymore. And no, I don't feel like anything's going to take its place. You know, it was such a specific thing. And like Adam said, like, appealing to such a specific group of people, it would be great if somebody wanted to pick that up, but it seems unlikely to me.
I frequently have a pipe dream, like, well, maybe I'll start a punk magazine. But then I'm like, John, there is no way you can't not lose tons of money on that and make that successful. I mean, how many punk magazines have failed horribly? And most of them, like, aren't even, and I'm not trying to be a jerk, but like, are like punk, but also kind of like metal and kind of like Maximum Rock and Roll is a punk magazine, you know? And I just don't know. Like, I want to do it, but there's so much work in a magazine, and it's like, well, if you just want to throw a bunch of money in the trash can, you can do that too, you know? anyway, so this is from Liza. Liza says, I like that you cover topics generally, but how about some street-level bands that don't get as much notice? What are good bands people don't know about? I already know about Bad Religion and NoFX. Tip me off to some bands that no one knows. Those are the best kind and the ones that are the most meaningful. Thanks, and thanks for the show, from Liza.
That's I think maybe a little bit easier given the audio format here than on Punk News itself. And on Punk News, we kind of have to talk about the new Bad Religion thing that comes out because we're worried that, like, oh, people are going to, you know, they're going to expect us to talk about this. It's like right in the middle of the Punk News wheelhouse, and it's the kind of thing that people are going to respond to. John posts about little bands that no one cares about like 17 times a week, and every time no one says a damn thing, and it's tough. And I hate to like judge what's going on in the site based on the commenters, but it feels sometimes like it's falling on deaf ears when we do that. And I'm never sure what the actual real world impact, as far as Punk News itself, like the site, is of us doing those things. Like I did an interview with a band where I ran the interview as a end of day Friday thing. The interview was mostly just like us walking through three of their songs. So it was super simple, but it was super full of media that someone could go listen to. And it sat up top of Punk News, and like no one said, no one even said anything negative. Just like no one said anything, but it was there for like 2 or 3 days. And the band loved me for it. But I'm thinking like, did anyone ever click past the headline on that? Like I have no way of knowing. So it's tough on the show here. Yeah, we should, of course. I think we try to do that when we're playing songs on the show more than not, because for some of the small bands, I think the rest of us won't know them. So if I'm bringing some strange little band from fucking Moncton to the table, you know, Tom or John or whoever is not going to necessarily have much to say about it because they won't have known. But, you know, well, we definitely try to do more of that. We'll try to play more of that kind of stuff. I mean, John has to stop trying to play 10-minute old funk songs and stuff like that, but that's you have to stop using the audio portion of this show to be an asshole, and it would go much better.
I love punishing people. Anyways, speaking of punishing people, you can punish us at podcast@punknews.org. Somebody play a song. Hallie, you want to kick off a song, or Adam, you want to kick off a song?
I kind of do want to play a song, but And I'm jumping in only because I feel like I'm totally pulling a John this week. Like,
good.
This is just the song that I've been listening to it all week. So if you ask me to play a song, this is what's coming from my heart. But I'm truly worried that our listeners are not going to care about it. But I'm just going to go for it anyway. And also just to double down on the assholishness of my choice. It is both a band that like possibly Punk News listeners maybe wouldn't get into. It's also not a small band that needs me plugging them, but I cannot stop listening to this song. I think it's so freaking good. It's called Dylan Thomas, and it's by Better Oblivion Community Center, which is the new project by Connor Oberst of Bright Eyes. And he's collaborating with this singer-songwriter, Phoebe Bridgers. It sounds like they were just kind of mutual fans of each other and decided to start this project together. This song is like, the melody is so good. It's like, you've never heard it before, but it has that like catchiness to it where it feels like sort of comfortably like familiar, but it's so pretty. Like I love, they do all these like unison vocals, which I feel like guys and girls never do. Like I feel like a lot of bands feel like, oh, well that should be a harmony, or maybe their ranges are different. And they're like, oh, we better sing in harmony with one another. But this is just like good, basic, like unison vocals all the way through. And I'll stop talking about it in a second. I really do love this song, but like, it also has that thing that I like where it's like a nice sort of jaunty melody with like completely like horrible, sad lyrics, which is like always my favorite combo. So yeah, so this song is called Dylan Thomas.
All around him, confetti.
And that was Dylan Thomas by BOC, but not Blue Oyster Cult, rather Better Oblivion Community Center. And let's break into some news. Haley mentioned some assholes, and we're going to talk about an asshole here. But is he a troubled asshole, or is he one worthy of scorn? Here's a wackier story from the week. For some reason, last year, as listeners might know, Varg Vikernes is the only guy behind Burzum. Of course, Burzum is the black metal group and one of the foundational black metal groups. And of course, Varg did about 13 years in jail for killing Euronymous of Mayhem. And he also did time in jail for burning down something like 6 churches or something. So he's about as extreme as it gets. When Varg got out of jail, it turns out that Varg is a white supremacist. And he has a YouTube channel where he talks about being a white supremacist. And he also talks about Dungeons and Dragons and other weird things like, you know, the best way to buy gas. And it's a weird channel. Anyways, for some reason, last year he got in an argument with some guy on the internet. The guy was named Nathan. And Nathan was arguing that that Jeeps built in capitalistic countries are better than Jeeps built in socialist countries. And Varg said the opposite. So they got into an argument and they said, okay, we're going to race our Jeeps from 0 to 60. And if Varg gets to 0 to 60 quicker, then Nathan has to go on Varg's YouTube page and apologize. But if Varg gets from 0 to 60, no, but if Nathan gets from 0 to 60 quicker, then Varg has to give Nathan his only copy of the original press of the Burzum, the first Burzum album. And that album is significant because that is the physical copy that was given to Varg by Euronymous before Varg killed Euronymous. So it's kind of a ghoulish artifact, if you will. Well, they raced, and of course, Varg lost. It took Varg 16 seconds to get from 0 to 60, which is not exactly a mind-blowing rate. Varg stated after he lost, "Of course I didn't think I was going to win. It's just that I wanted to make a point. You see, I'm pretty fed up with the greed everywhere. Everything is always about people trying to make profits. Profits to this, profits to that. The more the merrier. And there's no end to it. Cure the rot of greed in your brain by doing things not for profit but for the benefit of others. If you want to change the world, I do, you have to start with yourself." So after Varg mailed the CD to Nathan, Nathan sold the CD on Discogs for $1,500, which is a pretty princely sum for a CD, even if it is the Burzum debut album, which usually goes for about $250 on Discogs. A lot to unpack here. One of the things to unpack. This is weird and hilarious and weird. Second thing is it in poor taste to sell this item? Because it's basically an item given to by a dead man to his killer. And the other thing to unpack is, should we talk about Burzum at all? Varg is a white supremacist. He doesn't go around, you know, like saying like I guess you would say he's a more literate white supremacist, but he's a white supremacist. And by that I mean he doesn't go around like calling people nasty words, but he says that he thinks white people are the best and should be separate from other races. So he's not a nice guy. He's bad that way. And so I don't know. What do you do with the story? Do you throw your hands up and laugh? Do you frown at humanity? And if you were given a CD that was given by a dead man to his murderer, would you sell it or would you, I don't know, throw it away? I don't know.
John, I'm not well versed in the history and story of black metal. And I at first just assumed that this was some strange, strange no one that lives in your personal headspace that you expect the rest of us to know about. But going off the commenters, you know, this is a known quantity. So I'm wrong in the my first approach to this, which was like, who? So fill me in a little bit of the history here. He murdered a man.
Yeah.
Did his time. Got out.
Was kicked out of France.
Okay, got kicked out of France. Is a white supremacist. Why is he trying to give people advice about how they want to change the world?
Are you asking me from his perspective?
I don't know whose perspective I'm asking from. That's the most befuddling part about this. Like, okay, is crazy black metal murderer guy going to get in a Jeep race with someone? Of course. I expect that kind of thing to happen.
I do.
What I don't expect is once winning or losing, it doesn't really matter the outcome of said Jeep race, you spin that into your life philosophy about how, you know, everyone is so concerned with profits and are like I can't take someone's opinion on capitalism seriously if they've killed somebody. So I don't know, that whole aspect to this where there is a that there is some sociopolitical commentary from him wrapped into this is super weird to me, and I can't get over that. Would I sell the CD that has some ghoulish past to it for big money on Discogs? Totally fucking would. I would do that in a second. But yeah, I don't know. It is just so weird that, I mean, I guess it's the internet, so everyone has a platform to say whatever they want. And if you have served your time and got out of jail, you're allowed to be one of those people, but it's so strange.
I feel like, Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, I feel like if I had killed someone and then went to jail, upon release, I would want to go, like, I don't know, like move to an island somewhere and work as a janitor. Like, I don't think I would want to, like, be a guy on the internet with an opinion about anything.
He thinks it's funny.
I guess, but just, like, at the point where, like, you have been incarcerated for killing someone, it's just, like, you're just sort of just go be one with nature. Like, go tick off the clock until you yourself pass on. Like, I don't know if you just get to, like, show up and be another snarky guy on the internet. That's weird. I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm old fashioned, John, and I feel like there should be some more, like, cosmic comeuppance for taking another man's life than apparently you get these days.
I mean, the fact that you use the word, like, befuddling, like, that's exactly what that is. That is exactly the feeling that I had watching this video. It's so bananas. First of all, an adorable small child wanders into frame, like, very early on in this video about this Jeep race. And you're like, just, it's so upsetting because the child looks like an angel. And you're like, get this child away from this horrible person. And then it just gets more confusing because to call it a race is, it's not a race. He starts this Jeep and it sounds like an old jalopy, and he's on grass. Like, he's not even on a road, which is, like, sort of ties into your, like, if you murdered someone, you'd go live on an island. Like, it kind of does seem like he just is, like, in the middle of nowhere, driving on grass in this, like, ancient Jeep. Like, yes. So that's what's so befuddling about it. It does seem like he's kind of, like, gone away and is, like, sort of trying to live off the grid in some ways. And yet he needs to maintain some internet relevancy. Like, the whole thing is just completely baffling. And then, yeah, like, I think he just maybe wanted to get rid of this CD. Like, it's like an elaborate way to just get rid of this CD that he doesn't have good feelings about, maybe, because there's no way he could possibly have thought that someone else's Jeep wasn't going to go faster than his shitty old Jeep. And the whole thing was, like, so amusing to me. And then, yeah, I am feeling kind of bad about being amused because I'm like, oh, this is, like, a horrible racist murderer. But he really looks so foolish in the whole thing. I did find it amusing.
Haley, I'm glad you watched the video. Here's what I find. Let's set the record straight. Varg is a bad man, right? But he's a fascinating person in that, like, I'm going to reference the band Nails. The band band Nails, they're not murderers. They're not racist. They're not any of that. But, you know, they're very extreme, and they don't want, quote, posers at their show. They don't like wimpy metal. They're tough. You know, they're tough metal. Meanwhile, Varg, metal-wise, is extreme as it gets. He's killed people. He's burnt down multiple churches. And then, Haley, you saw the video. He's, like, walking around cracking jokes. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. all these metal guys are like, I'm tough. I'm serious. I don't ever smile. And the most extreme – I'm not saying he's good, but the most extreme guy, he's, like, cracking jokes. He's laughing. He's walking around. So what does that say about these guys that are tough, you know, and serious? But also, it's like Varg is, like, so weird because – well, obviously, he's weird. But, like he jokes about killing Euronymous. Like, he clearly doesn't feel bad about it. He thinks it's, like, funny. And like, in some video, like, I actually was going to post some of the videos on the website, but I thought probably shouldn't, because he does have videos that are clearly white supremacist videos, and we don't want to be posting that, you know. Yeah. But he he's got some videos where he's like, you know, here's why white people are the best and other worse things. But then he's like, he's got other videos. He's like, here's good strategies for Dungeons and Dragons. And it's like, what? like he's like such a, first of all, I feel like Varg's entire existence is just a game of Dungeons and Dragons going horribly wrong. Like, you know what I mean? But second, it's like, I would like to interview him, but I guess I can't, because it's like, we're in a state right now. And I sort of understand, like, in punk rock, at least when you interview somebody, it's implied that you're supporting them even when you're not, you know? So I would like to interview Varg because he's such a fascinating and bad person. But on the other hand, the counter argument, which I may or may not agree with, I have to think about, is you're going to spend your time interviewing someone, why not interviewing someone good, or at least someone that's not completely reprehensible? But I guess the counter argument is, well, because we want to learn about bad people so we can try to avoid making bad people in the future. I don't know. I'd love to interview him.
He is fascinating. I mean, he's straight up. But also when he's joking, he talks so slowly. It's so disturbing. Why does he say everything so slowly? Like, even when he's like being lighthearted or joking about things, it really is like an actor should like study this as like absolutely like the for a horror movie character. There's so many weird layers there going on. It's like quite a fascinating performance by this person.
How about the part where he does like PewDiePie effects, where he like changes his voice, it's like really high pitched, or he puts like graphics on the screen? It's like weird.
God. And he does like a weird cutaway where suddenly his face is very close to the screen. It's like very kind of like cutesy. Meanwhile, he's bragging about the fact that you can't sell his band's shit on eBay. Because it's racist and eBay doesn't want to have anything to do with it. I don't know if that's true or not, but he does claim that in the video.
You can't buy his stuff on eBay, but I believe, but I'm not sure, that Burzum's music itself is not racist. But like the first three or four albums might not be racist, and the ones after it are. And it's tough to say because a lot of the albums are in Norwegian, and so... I don't know Norwegian. Anyways.
John, don't interview the guy. Don't do it.
I don't know, Adam.
John, this is the kind of thing where if you do it, it becomes my problem.
But that's only because you make it your problem. I mean, honestly, I'm probably not going to because I don't have time for this heat right now. But Adam's like, I don't want any problems. I don't want any problems. But then you make it your problem, Adam. You don't have to get involved. This is between me and Varg.
No.
Well, I'm probably not going to anyways because I can't deal with the... Oh, go ahead, Allie.
You shouldn't interview him because it would take too long. The man talks creepily slowly.
Well put. Speaking of people that are not creepy, speaking of the exact opposite of Varg, the as we said, was it halfway between the Ramones and Fall Out Boy? If Varg was Fall Out Boy, this man and this woman and this other man would be the Ramones. Ian MacKaye, Amy Farina, and Joe Lally, they have recorded their debut album. And, of course, Ian and Amy are in the Evens. And, of course, Ian and Joe were in Fugazi. And so this album has quite a bit of significance to it. What was interesting is the existence of this album was mentioned as an aside on a – and I don't mean to insult it – but a relatively unknown blog that not a whole lot of people visit. However, the article is very good. The blog is called There's Something Hard in There, and it focuses on – Ian MacKaye's family. I know Alec was involved in music, but almost all of Ian's family is involved in music, which I did not know. So you can get a link to the article at Punk News. But I guess the main story here is that there is a full Ian, Amy, Joe band. The band doesn't have a name yet, but it'll come out sometime relatively soonish, I guess. And what should we expect? Will it be the Evens Part 2? Will it be Fugazi Part 2? Or will it be something completely different? Who's to say?
These guys, did they not play a show? Was it like in a church or something like that? Like, didn't they have like a single big performance that happened a few months ago?
The article says there was two shows, but I believe there's only one. There was definitely at least one. They did one that was a homeless benefit at a church in Washington, D.C.
Right. Was there any feedback from people about like what that sounded like? Because
no, it was so weird. Like I thought people would be like rushing to reviews, but like on the internet there was like no response. So like maybe it's like really bad and like everyone's embarrassed to say it is, you know. I don't know,
but like it didn't show up on YouTube, or people didn't, because people are filming everything all the time, right? That didn't happen.
be fair, like if Ian said, please don't film this, I think most people would coalesce.
Yeah, he would like give everyone a stern look and like adjust his toque a little bit, and people would be like, okay, and put the phone away. Or maybe it was one of those like Arcade Fire douchebag shows where you had to like put your phone in a little bag that auto zips or something like that. I haven't actually been to one of these, but I know they exist. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I had to do that at the Misfits. I had to lock up my phone.
At the Misfits, really?
Yeah.
Oh, God. That probably wasn't that. That's expensive. I'd love to know what this sounds like. I hope it's more on the Fugazi than the Evens end of things, just based on personal tastes. But I'm just glad he's making music.
Me too. And I'm glad that he like still wants to collaborate. I think it's like amazing when people still want to collaborate together on new projects after such like a long history of making music together, you know, like that he still wants to play with Joe, or that, you know, like even what, I guess the Evens like haven't, that band started what, like over 15 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact that he still wants to play music with Amy. It's like you just, so many collaborations get stale or go south or there's bad feeling. I just think it's awesome when people are just like decades later, they're like, yes, let's start a new band together. Like, I just think that's amazing.
What do you all think of Ian's low-key announcement of he announced the existence of the band. Like, he put out like some email about like distribution, like okay, we've got, you know, new restocks of the Void album, you know, the Faith Void album, and we're raising money for the homeless down at St. George's Church or whatever it's called. Oh yeah, also I've got a new band and we're going to be playing there too, like one sentence. And then he announces his album in this relatively obscure blog. You know, many artists, especially in today's environment, and I don't blame them, would, you know, have the, you know, we're putting out an album, you know, get ready, it's coming in 3 months, you know, we're putting out an album, you know, Facebook ads and all this. And Ian just like, oh yeah, I've got a band, oh yeah, we put out an album. Is he and I guess here's the question, is he being willfully obscure, is he just out of touch, or does he not care, or does he like, you know what, I'm not a slave to Facebook, so I'm going to put out this information in a way that I feel is comfortable. And because I can see things clearer than most people, this information will get disseminated despite the fact that it's not on Twitter or Facebook or YouTube or all that jazz.
I've never thought about it in terms of like the privilege of being Ian MacKaye, although that is an interesting take on it. Like he can do that more than other people would be able to, and it would still get out there. But I've never had the impression that he, I guess, approaches anything with too much of a strategic marketing mindset. Like, I really truly believe that he operates on like the level that he's operating on is the surface of it. Like, you know, oh yeah, he just said it because it didn't seem that important, and he's not going to go hype it out. If you want to flip, like, if you want to take a look at like other bands that have done seemingly, I guess, done things that seem like underground or like really DIY, but it only works based on their privilege level. If you compare that to say like when Radiohead released In Rainbows, and everyone was just like, oh, this is such a daring new way that music is going to work, is that you just release it for free and people pay what they want for it. And it was like, yeah, hold on. But they're also Radiohead. So they could go and they could pull that stunt, and people are going to talk about it for 3 months afterwards. You know, if you're just like some garage band, you can do that and no one's going to give too much of a shit, especially back in those days where there wasn't like the infrastructure to collect payments online and stuff like that. So I wonder so for some bands that do, you know, strangely low key stuff, I kind of want to look at it and go and take like the, yeah, but you're Radiohead view on it. Ian, though, I don't know, Ian. He has really sold me on the fact that he exists, you know, free of any commercial interest. He's like a monk.
All right then. Speaking, is Hallie still there?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, fair enough. Haley, are you excited for the new? Oh no, you already talked about it, didn't you? All right, my bad. It was me, and I totally stumbled and missed the kick and doing very poorly at this job. Okay, speaking of people that'll probably do good at their job, Dinosaur Jr. They're putting out a rock camp. Basically, you can go and jam with Dinosaur Jr. for 3 days from July 30th to August 2nd at the Full Moon Resort in New York State. Basically, Jay Masics, Lou Barlow, and Murph will be guest counselors, and they'll have workshops where they'll teach you how to play their instruments, and they'll also do a live performance there. This is significant. Say, John, why is it significant? This is significant because a lot of the classic rock have done this, namely Aerosmith and Kiss, and When you go to, say, Aerosmith Rock Camp, like, basically session guys play with you for, like, 3 days, and then, like, Aerosmith shows up for, like, 20 minutes, and they, like, play a song, and they, like, sign autographs and leave. And so – and it's not cheap. It's, like, $6,000 or something. And the general feeling from people – from the Eddie Trunk radio program is that people generally feel as though, you know, they kind of got played and you know – they spend a lot of money, so they want to feel good about their purchase, and they're doing their best to feel good about their purchase, but you can tell deep down they don't. But that's always kind of for, like, washed up, like, hair metal bands and that kind of a thing. Dinosaur Jr. is still, you know, a well-regarded band that has an active touring schedule that I think still does pretty well financially and commercially. That's the same thing. So here's the thing. Did Dinosaur Jr. just say, oh, man, Poison and Rat are raking in this rock camp money, we need a piece of that? Or is this just them doing something weird, or what is this? And would you guys go to this, and would you pay, like, a significant amount of money to go to this, to jam with Dinosaur Jr. or the alt rock band or punk band of your choice?
I look at this and I just think of Camp Krusty, which is, I guess, what you were getting at, where with you know, you just play with session guys the whole time. Like, I can't imagine that the band is hanging out all the whole time, you know, teaching you stuff. It's not your heroes. It's going to be a bunch of, you know, people that work for the company that actually put this stuff on, I suspect.
I think you get to play with them. Unless everything that they're saying to promote it is bullshit. They say that, you know, that Jay Maskus is gonna, you know, like, teach classes on, like, pedals and guitar style. This killed me because they said that Lou Barlow was going to give a 4-string guitar and ukulele clinic. Like, to me, it actually sounds like you get to, like, hang out and be a music nerd with these guys.
Jay is famous for his interviews and being incredibly, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for, restrained in his speech. So I'd love to see Jay class. I mean, do yourself a favor and Google some Jay Maskus interviews, and you're in for a treat. With these kinds, and I'm not saying with this thing, but like with, like, the Poison or Rat or the Aerosmith ones, not that I would go to, but I feel like those, it's like almost embarrassing. It's like, oh, I'm a middle-aged man. I want to be a rock star, but I'm not. So I'm going to pay an actual rock star a whole bunch of money just so I can look at them, you know? But I mean, that's not the worst thing in the world either, I guess. If you're having fun, you're having fun. So I was just very surprised by this. And I honestly don't know if this is subversive or just following the marketing trends. I really don't know. Let's play a tune. I'll play a tune. The Coat Hangers, they put out a new album. It's called The Devil You Know. I dig it a lot. I'm a huge Coat Hangers fan. They're on tour right now. This track is called Last Call, and it's the Coat Hangers kind of merging their punk rock vibes with kind of their indie / alt rock vibe, similar to Down from the album Nosebleed Weekend. But the new album is kind of darker, kind of creepier, but also kind of more the music is very sparse and very clean. And it's cool, and this is the Coat Hangers doing The Devil You Know. No, I'm sorry. The Coat Hangers off the album The Devil You Know doing Last Call.
I'm doing
And we're back. Adam and Haley, this one touchy story. Do we want to cover this, or do we just want to keep with the good vibes? I'm feeling like maybe we'll just keep with the good vibes. What do you guys think?
Yeah, sure. I'm done with that.
All right. So anyway, Flipper, they're going back on tour. Of course, Flipper is a seminal punk rock band. Not only are they one of the earliest West Coast bands, they are also one of the first, or the first, punk band to really play slow and grimy and grungy. They're important to early grunge. They're important to early metal, or at least early 80s alt metal, if you will. And they're just one of the most savage punk bands there are. Unfortunately, half the band is deceased. Flipper were known for being wild guys, and half the band passed away because of that lifestyle. So they're going on tour with David Yao of the Jesus Lizard handling most but not all of the vocals. I'm trying to think of the other guy that handles the guitar. What's his name? Bruce Lucas has passed away. Well, I'll think of it in a second. Anyways,
am I totally crazy? I thought Bruce Lucas just couldn't. He's dead. I feel like I'm losing my mind. I have to Google this now.
Oh wait, what's that?
I thought he had health problems.
I think he's dead. We'll find out. Let's see here. Will Shatters died. He died back in the 80s.
Yeah, like some of those guys have died for sure.
Yeah. Maybe Bruce Lewis isn't dead. I could be wrong. You're probably right.
No. I think you're right.
Okay. Ricky Williams is deceased. We'll find out why we discuss this. Anyways, so really, Ted Falcone. Ted is one of the main guys of Flipper, and also drummer Steve DePace is still in the band. Rachel Thall is in the band. She's a newer member. She's been in the band about 10 years. And David Yao, of course, is more famous. He has the Jesus Lizard and Scratch Acid, but he's, you know, chipping in to do vocals. So here's the question. Is this cool, and is this keeping the spirit of Flipper alive, or is this – or should Flipper be put to rest and this is kind of tarnishing their legacy? Or could it be both? I think as far as vocalists go, David Yao's a certainly good replacement, you know, but should they keep the party going or?
If you're going to go pick a vocalist to go fill that role, that one totally fits, right? So that's fine. So the show would probably be fun. So if you want to look at it from that standpoint and not worry too much about legacy, you know, I'd rather go see this version of Flipper than whatever version of Black Flag is playing at the moment, right? But
true.
And I mean, the other part of that is that does Flipper, at least the surviving members thereof, do they owe anything to this very like ephemeral concept of legacy? Like if they want to go play these songs live, should they not have that, you know, should it not be their right to go do that and to not have to worry about like how people are going to like wring their hands over about this, like what this means as far as the band's history and stuff like that. Like at some point, you got to make the choice where are you a guy in a band or are you the shepherd of some legacy? And I'm okay with them being a guy in a band. I'm sure I've expressed like the opposite opinion on some Black Flag Misfits level in the past, some Dead Kennedys level, but this one doesn't bother me.
Haley is correct and I'm incorrect. Bruce Lewis is still alive. But he broke his back in 1994 and recovered somewhat, but then had another accident in 2009, so he's totally out of commission.
Yeah, that bums me out, man. As someone, this is completely irrelevant to, but as someone that like couldn't play music for a while because of back pain, that kind of breaks my heart. I hate that. But yeah, I don't know. I always err on the side of like, if people want to play music, they should play music. It's, you know, again, if you don't want to see this lineup, don't go. But like, I think if people want to tour and play music, I normally don't have a problem with that. You know,
I wonder if my stance on this is completely subjective as to how I feel about the band at the time. I saw Flipper in 2007 and he was Bruce was still singing at that time, and it was real cool. The weird thing was it was at this thing. It was like some event in San Francisco. It was Flipper, Avengers, the Mutants, and I think one other band, and Neil Hamburger. Oh, and also Negative Trend, which is real cool. The proto Flipper band, Negative Trend. And the weird thing is they were playing and people were like yelling, "Cut your hair, hippie." It's like, do you people not even know like what like this is your age of band? Like Flipper dealt with this bullshit back in 1980. Why are they dealing with this now? Like Flipper has never been known for being like a UK subs kind of band. I don't know why people are giving them grief. It was so weird. Anyways, Flipper is cool. I approve of this. I think David Yao is an excellent selection. And I think Flipper's music should get out there and be heard because they're so influential and so great. A lot of people like the first album the best. I love the second album with Sacrifice on it. But like Adam said, Black Flag 2019, I'm giving that two thumbs down. Is there a difference between Black – well, there is a difference between Black Flag 2019 and Flipper. With Flipper, they don't all hate each other, or if they do, that's not the reason why certain people aren't in the band. The reason certain people aren't in the band is because they broke their back or are dead. Whereas Black Flag, where I used to be Greg Ginn fan numero uno, he's just been such a jerk to everyone that I'm not interested in supporting him at all. So maybe that is the difference, you know. So maybe it's the case. Maybe there is no rule as to whether or not a band should reunite and tour. Maybe it's a case-by-case basis. I think Flipper should. You know, I think Flag definitely should. So, yeah. And who's really hurting? You know what I mean? We're kind of past the era where, like, music takes itself so seriously because no one's making any money anymore. So if people are having fun, then we're all having fun. I don't see a problem with that, you know. We got a couple of stories that we're going to blast through here. Quam, they've put out a new song, and they're going to put out a new album. The song is called Buy a Toy, and of course, Quam just played the Punk News Magnificent Matinee. And listen, I don't mind saying it, people. Quam won the audience over. Most of the audience had no idea who Quam was before they played. Quam got up there, and they kicked ass. It's kind of like I call it art pop punk. It's kind of pop punky. It's kind of art punky. It's kind of like the Avengers. It's real cool. Their first single off this album was called Let's Go to the Mall, which I think is stellar. The second track is called Buy a Toy, which I dig, and I am excited for this album. Haley or Adam, did either of you have a chance to check out this track, or are you familiar with Brooklyn's Quam?
I checked it out. I thought it was good. Yeah, like I don't know if I have anything like insightful to say about it, but yeah, I thought it was cool. I should listen to more of their stuff.
Yeah, Quam's real cool, and I'm excited to see them in Philadelphia again. So if you're in Philadelphia, you might want to keep your eyes on the Punk News website for something that's coming up kind of soon. And Adam, you catch what I'm passing? You catch what I'm kicking out there?
Who? What? Where? I don't follow you, John.
Adam, did you listen to the song?
I did. I liked it. Avengers is a good point of reference for there. This is not a band that is trying to be, you know, overbearing or super deep or anything like that, but it's good, fun, propulsive rock and roll, and people should go check it out.
I would argue that actually some of their songs are like really deep, or if they're not deep, then they're weird. Like Let's Go to the Mall is a song about going to the mall because your shoes don't fit your feet, which I think is I don't think every song needs to be like, you know, this is how I feel about, you know, my disconnect with my parents and why they couldn't relate to me. I think that's valid too. But I also, as I get older, I have a more appreciation for kind of the new wave perspective, and that like, here's a song about something, and it's the meaning isn't as important as the skewed view of it, if you will. So we're approaching a common topic, but from a weird vantage point, rather than approaching perhaps an uncommon topic from a common vantage point, if you will. And I feel like I'm over-intellectualizing things. Anyway, Quam is cool. Here's another thing that maybe some people are over-intellectualizing or under-intellectualizing. Midnight Peacemaker. He just put out a new music video. Midnight Peacemaker is one guy. And the video is for We All Know, off his debut album, Diary of Dissonance. I really dug the album Diary of Dissonance. It's kind of Midnight Peacemaker kind of doing an homage to a lot of 80s music, but he puts somewhat of a twist on it. And it's out on Burger Records. And so, of course, being out on Burger Records, one of my favorite labels, is there's a bit of self-aware irony in that like he wears a full Adidas tracksuit and ski goggles all the time. And so the question is, does he think that looks cool? And does it look cool? Or does he know that it looks silly and he's playing up the fact that it looks silly? Anyways, they got a new music video for We All Know. The video is cool-ish. It's just kind of him like playing in the forest and some other people dancing around. But I dug this, and people kind of – well, and here's the point. A lot of people hate this just because of the way he dresses. They say, oh, he's doing the quote, hipster thing. But and maybe he is, but I think the substance shines through, and I think the get-up kind of enhances the music and isn't a get-up just for the sake of a get-up.
I like weird bands with strange front people in a strange costume, and they just live that life. I've seen like two or three just like solo maniacs get on stage with a synthesizer and a drum machine, and they're, you know, covered in green paint, and they just scream and yelp and, you know, fight with their demons for 20 minutes, and you stand 2 feet away from them with a beer in hand, just aghast at what's happening in front of you. And God, I eat that up. I love that. So I'm all for weird costume guy.
Yeah, I don't know. This didn't speak to me, but yeah. In fact, I was so surprised it was on Burger Record because it was like, didn't, I don't know. I don't want to, I'm so bad. I don't like being mean.
Let it out, Hallie. Let it out. Let's have it.
I don't even need to be mean because, like I said, I just like when people are making music. I have no problem with this. I guess I should just. It didn't speak to me, and I can leave it at that.
Fair enough. Okay, let's see here. Adam or Hallie, is there anything else you guys want to talk about? I know Adam's got some kind of a story. Adam, you want to talk about this? Or
two little quick notes on things that you, the Punk News Podcast listener, should go check out because they exist out there in the world now. So the first are that the Toronto noise punk band Graze has a new record coming out. It's their third LP, and they have the first single from it online, and the song is called These Things Happen. You should go check this out. This is one of my favorite bands. They have been on a super satisfying arc throughout their career, where their first record was just really caustic noise, like noise punk, very, very reminiscent of that Toronto scene that birthed like Fucked Up and Mets and bands like that. And then as they went on, they started introducing like more dynamics into what they were doing, more kind of like loud, quiet moments and like alternative rock influences and things like that. But in a really like, not in a, you know, we're maturing and becoming more boring way, but in a very satisfying, you know, we're becoming better songwriters and are writing songs that don't need to be raging way. And then their last record that they put out was a record in 2016 called Outer Heaven. It was released like within a few months span of this strange tape that was called Warm Shadow, which was just them totally fucking around in the studio and doing like strange tape loops and taking like pieces of songs that didn't make it on the record and just blowing them out into strange soundscapes and doing shoegazy stuff with it and all this stuff. And you listen to that and you were like, God, like I want this band just to get weird because they have it in them just to put whatever expectations they had of being like a big noisy rock band aside and just become strange. And from what the label this is coming out on Car Park Records on May 10th. From what the label's been talking about is they're alluding to a lot of weird on this one. And if that's the case, this is setting itself up well for a record that I'm going to care a lot about come the end of the year. So anyways, the band is Graze. You want to go listen to the song These Things Happen. It's on the internet, so you can go find that. The other thing, if you were a fan of the... I'm not sure what to peg them as a genre, but the punk band Crusades, an Ottawa band that was on... They had stuff come out on, I believe... Some stuff came out on No Idea, but they played Fest a whole bunch of times. They sang pop punk, but with like lyrics that were about like Dark Ages heretics and like a lot of evil, but like very serious, like historically rooted evil, like Salem Witch Trial style evil, not like a leftover crack putting pentagrams on everything evil. If there's some sort of like scale of like how evil is your punk band and how cartoony is it? Crusades was like the most uncartoony version of that. But so that band broke up. I think they played their last show at Fest last year. And The guys have been, who were in that band, have been bopping around doing various things. But two of the members of the band, Dave Williams and Scotty Lobotomy, they have now got back together with the most unexpected non-Crusade sounding thing. So they have formed like an 80s synth pop duo that's called Surrender. It's super wild in that it is super authentic, like just pop sheen all over the place. But it's the same vocalist from Crusade. So when you go listen to it, it's a total trip that, you know, here is this guy singing about, I don't know, like the abuses of the church. And now they're singing these, like, you know, love songs over Moogs and stuff. Like, it's great. So anyways, you should go check out Surrender. They have a song online called Hold On. There's no word yet on what record that's actually going to end up on or anything like that. I think they're still shopping it around. But if you liked Crusades, you should go check out Surrender. It's weird. Yeah, I don't know. These are things that these are things that I write about on the newsletter that I do, but I don't actually write about on Punk News because I don't have enough time, but I probably should. So anyways, what should we play? Actually, here, we'll do this. Just to loop more news into here. Speaking of Ottawa, one of my favorite music festivals came to an end last year. There was an event every year called the Ottawa Explosion. It went on for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, and the organizers of it decided to hang it up last year. And there's been a whole bunch of stuff that's been announced in the city since that have become the successor festivals to it. So one of them that was just announced is called the Side by Side Weekend. It's happening from July 25th through 28th. And it's called that because it's at two neighboring venues, Black Squirrel Books and the House of Targ. And both of these places are super cool if you've never been there. Black Squirrel is like a big used bookstore, but it's a big independent used bookstore that happens to be also licensed to sell liquor and will just have shows all weekend long in and amongst the books. Like, they just clear out some areas between the bookshelves and they set the band up there. House of Targ is the... House of Targ, I'm sure, like, if you're not from Ottawa, you may be aware of it, because their t-shirts and things like that are all over the place. I'm sure if you've seen, like, photographs of, like, Pup or something like that, half the time one of them is wearing a House of Targ shirt. It is a pinball arcade that also happens to have shows and a big pierogi restaurant built into it. So these two restaurants, these two places are right next door to each other. They both have shows. So they're doing a music festival basically between the two of them. So you get your ticket and you go from Black Squirrel to Targ and Targ to Black Squirrel. And that's your weekend. Whole bunch of cool bands are already on the list that are playing that. BBQD, John Creedon and the Flying Hellfish, Future Girls, Death Sticks, and the Steve Ademic Band are playing it. Ademic has got a new record. It is coming out, well, as of recording this, on Friday. It's called Paradise. It's going to be on Dirt Nap. We premiered a song from it on Punk News last week, and I'm going to play it for you. That song was called When I Was Gone. Steve said that this is probably as close as we get to traditional power pop or a CBC radio hit if we were to ever have one. So I don't know if that means anything to Americans, but whatever. So this is the song When I Was Gone by the Steve Ademic Band from their new record Paradise on Dirt Nap. On August 9th, a Sunday, asking my heart to pass it on. I can never let another take long. I left behind a strange way. If I trip, I could have swum and you were gone. I've been dreaming, but I can't keep moving on. Yeah.
with the Steve Demick Band doing a track off the new album, Paradise. Speaking of pierogies, Hallie, have you ever gotten pierogies at Warsaw in Brooklyn?
I was just thinking that, like, rock show plus pierogies, it's like such a good combo. That's my one of my favorite things about seeing a show at Warsaw.
Are those pierogies especially delicious, or do they just taste especially delicious because you're in a good mood because you're at a show and having fun?
I think they're like good. I think they're darn good pierogies. But yes, I think you're on to something. Like, you're just so delighted that you're at a rock show eating a pierogi that it gives it a little something, some little something extra.
Well put. Well, Hallie, anything else you want to talk about this week? Anything else you want to cover? Anything you want the listeners to know?
You wrote about it on the website, so I won't talk about it for too long. But I just have to say how much I loved this thing that Pup did with their new single, where they, before they put the single out, they put out chord charts and the lyrics, and they asked people to cover it. Like, they asked people to cover a song that they'd never heard. There's like something about that I love, just like this big community art project where then people really did have to just sort of like, you know, if all you have is chords and lyrics, there's like a lot to be still built about a song. And so I love that they opened it up to the community. They got way more responses than they thought they would. And so, yeah, that's what that's their single, Free at Last. You know, if you have the time, it's really worth just looking to see like all the weird responses that they got to this, like, you know, like public assignment, you know, that they gave to people. And if you don't have a lot of time, you can just watch the Free at Last video, because they did a fun edit right up at the top of it of just clips of some of their favorite submissions. So I thought that was such a fun way of reverse engineering the cover song.
They got 253 submissions of it. And they put together a playlist that's out there that have all of them back to back, and it's something like 13 hours long. So I don't know if I'd recommend anyone go sit down and listen to 13 hours of that, but the video totally does like a cool collage of various clips of people playing it. It's weird to me that like this is like Pup has had so many of these gigantic high concept music videos that have like quote unquote gone viral. Like they had that like choose your own adventure thing on YouTube years ago. They had that early, I guess the video for DVP off their last record was that collage of all these like 80s video, or like the montage of all these like 80s video game clips that was really big. They were doing all this stuff with like Finn Wolfhard before Stranger Things really blew up, and then that turned around and fed back into the popularity of those videos too. And this one, this video is like probably, let's say, their cheapest. Like, it's the one that they made for the least amount of money, and yet they still managed to pull off this gigantic community art project with it. So they have an amazing track record with all of this, but they're really going to blow. They're really going to like disappoint people when they just go make a music video like a normal band one day.
Yeah, it's got to be high concept in some way, right?
Yeah, like, I don't know where you go from where they've gone with it, but yeah, it's cool. It's a fun song too. So, people should go look that up. It's called Free at Last. Johnny, you got anything last to say to the world?
The listeners are free at last. Hallie, Adam, John, thanks for being on the podcast, and we'll see you next week.